The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Want the real story behind the sound bites and headlines? Let's find the facts. Remember, it's not a conspiracy theory if it's the truth. You are not paranoid or confused. You just need to know.
Welcome, everybody, to a special edition of Need to Know. Kip Kiefer with you for another week on this holiday Monday. I'm broadcasting here on TKR. I always laugh at the fact that there's so many Monday holidays, but this is our regular day to put together a broadcast or two. We have the Need to Know and Kiefer and Curry shows scheduled for Monday. And Tony Curry, the taskmaster that he is, I think the slogan around here is less holidays, more work, because this is not a holiday in terms of conveying thoughts and sentiments and whatnot on our program. So we're going to press forward here and make this part of the day. But in honor of that, this Memorial Day, instead of harping on events in the country, and there are many of them, there's always just a dizzying amount of headlines, because the greatest ringmaster in the history of civilization, Donald Trump, is in the center ring with the top hat and the red felt coat on, running up the festivities. So it is a furious one headline after another kind of a world right now. But we're going to take a step back from that, because I want to talk about Memorial Day. And it means a lot to me personally. I hope by the end of the broadcast, maybe you'll have a little additional perspective, and perhaps not suggesting it doesn't mean anything to you now, but I think there's some elements of these Monday holidays that are somewhat lost in what the celebrations are all about. And this is, to me, one of the most sacred and solemn of all of these holidays, because they've kind of morphed into a day off work and a day to have a party or go drink a beer with some friends, and all that's great. But we can't get away from the fact that what this is a day where we remember the reason that we are here in the greatest country ever conceived, with all of the individual liberties, all of the ability to conduct our lives without a major presence hovering over us and kind of telling us what we need to believe and what we can eat and drink and what we can drive and what kind of appliances we can have in our homes. We are living in a country that was an audacious experiment when it was set out to be conceived. And here we are 249 years later on July 4th this year, just 1 year short of 250 years of having a country, once again, where you are 100% in charge of your destiny. You can set the tone. You can make it happen one way or the other. And I fear that things have changed just in my lifetime from the appreciation of that and the unbelievable appreciation, which I can tell you I've always had as a child, going back to when I was a child, of appreciating the sacrifice that so many Americans made, laying down the ultimate gift, their own lives, to make sure that this country was preserved and this country could flourish and this country could continue to be the experimental test for whether or not a nation conceived in liberty can survive, or as Lincoln said, can long endure. So I think it's important that we don't just look at this Monday on Memorial Day every year as a time that, you know, we don't have to work and, you know, it's just another holiday. Terry Quillian, my partner on radio for a long time, she and I did a special Memorial Day show a few years ago, and she was talking about she'd spent a lot of time in England, and she said, you know, in England, they start off with themes for their holidays and they have a purpose, but eventually they just get morphed into the same category. People in England refer to a Monday holiday as a bank holiday, and the meaning and why it was established is completely abandoned. It's just a day off. It's a bank holiday. That means the banks are closed. And I don't want us to get to that point in this country, because celebrating the people that gave the, as Lincoln once again said, the last full measure of devotion is something that I really don't want to see our country get away from. And I think a lot of people, unfortunately, because it's not emphasized like it should be, have gotten into the mode of kind of blending Memorial Day and Veterans Day into some same general category. Now, let me clarify that statement by telling you 365 days a year, 24 hours per day, it should be Veterans Day in the United States of America. It is should be Veterans Day every day to appreciate, personally thank, and just, you know, thank God above that we had people willing to serve our nation at all corners of the globe, in all kinds of dangerous conflict, that put on the American uniform and step up and represent our country and protect our interests here at home and around the world. So I want to start off by saying to all of you listening that served in the armed services or had you know, other military careers of any kind, my heartfelt thank you to each and every one of you who are listening and family members that you have. I appreciate their service so much. But I'm a little bit you know, it kind of just raises my personal alarm that the emphasis seems to be on making Memorial Day just a generic extension of that appreciation for our veterans and anyone who served. Memorial Day is separate from the just general appreciation of so many people that have served this country, because Memorial Day is when we remember the people who gave the ultimate sacrifice, laying down their lives for their country and for their fellow citizens. And that's something that needs to be singled out and emphasized. I was watching a baseball game yesterday, and the play-by-play guy was going off on this long dissertation of, and of course, tomorrow's Memorial Day and we don't have a game, so I want to make sure that we send out our thanks to all of you that have served in the military. And it is appropriate to do that. It's appropriate to do that every day. But again, I think that some Americans, because it has not been emphasized, Memorial Day is the day we remember the people that made the ultimate sacrifice. And once again, to quote Lincoln, the last full measure of devotion. And I don't think we should get away with that. And I can support that statement by saying that Memorial Day was originally created by President Lincoln before his unfortunate assassination in 1865. Lincoln had proclaimed, after attending the Gettysburg ceremonies to officially open the Gettysburg Cemetery on July 3rd of 1863, in a small town in Pennsylvania called Gettysburg. Both the Confederate Army and the Union Army really just kind of crossed each other's paths by mistake. Both were trying to get to the capital of Pennsylvania. And if you want to win a beer at a bar, sometime ask, people are so bad about state capitals, and ask what the state capital of Pennsylvania is. And 90% of people will tell you Philadelphia. The other 10% will probably say Pittsburgh. It is Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Harrisburg, Pennsylvania is more on the eastern edge of Pennsylvania, and it was a priority of Robert E. Lee when the tide was turning in their favor in 1863 in the Civil War. Lee was trying to get to Harrisburg to seize control of the capital of Pennsylvania because it wasn't heavily defended, but that would have given him a clear pathway to move into Washington, D.C., and that probably would have forced almost certainly the end of the war and major concessions to the southern states of the agenda they were trying to hold on to. At the same time, the Union Army, knowing that the rebels had invaded Pennsylvania, were trying to find them and head them off. They didn't know exactly where they were going, but Harrisburg was a likely target because of its accessibility to Washington. So you had Robert E. Lee and George Meade, the new commander of the Union Army, kind of groping around the countryside looking for each other's army, and they actually intersected in that small town, Gettysburg, which has become so famous. If you've never been to the battlefield at Gettysburg, the Gettysburg Museum, and the cemetery for so many of fallen heroes in that conflict, I urge you to put that on your list, because it was such a meaningful situation for me. And it just ironically, as you know, I do a lot of different kind of broadcasts. It was a Saturday morning during football season that my friends and I had traveled there. And we've got a great friend named Jack Drummond, who was so engaged with the history of the Gettysburg conflict that Jack moved from Georgia 20 years ago to go live in Gettysburg, because he actually got a job as a guide who took people around to all of the significant places on that giant rolling hills battleground. And it was great to be with Tony, who had all this experience and all this knowledge. But of course, like I said, that's not only Tony Curry Radio that demands action. On that Saturday morning, I had a regular sports show on WJOX here in Birmingham, the sports station, talking about football. And so I had to excuse myself for just a few minutes to do an abbreviated program that morning from the sacred grounds of the Gettysburg battlefield, calling back into the studio down in Birmingham and recording my little program that day. And of course, I made reference to where I was and was standing actually at the side of the battlefield where, on, again, July 3rd, 1863, the culminating battle of that conflict, Pickett's Charge, was taking place. And Pickett's Charge was the Confederate Army deciding to mount one more massive assault right at the heart of the Union Army's position. The Southern troops were deployed in the wooded area down at the bottom of a long pasture that was a pretty steep climb to to reach the Union position, which was on the high ground, heavily fortified. And if you read anything about Civil War history, you know that generally whoever was able to occupy the highest ground had a huge advantage in that kind of warfare, because it was just so difficult to do uphill assaults. And from a firing and defensive position, having at the high ground was absolutely critical. So on this day, that was the situation. Robert E. Lee, who had come to believe his army was pretty much invincible, believed that one just bombardment by every cannon they had on the battlefield, they lined up like 80 cannons and just showered the Union position with fire for a couple hours before this assault. Unfortunately, there was some not so good calculation that day by the cannonade folks, because they were shooting basically over the heads of the defensive positions. And that turned out to be catastrophic, because they thought they had done a lot of damage to the Union lines, and that didn't turn out to be the case. The whole point was, I'm standing on the Union side doing my radio report with my cell phone, and I walked back down the hill when I finished. I did mention in that fact that, you know, I think that day there was an intersectional game. I can't remember exactly what teams, but it might have been Wisconsin and I don't know, Mississippi State, or there was some kind of intersectional game where a northern team was playing a southern team. And I said, I'm standing on a different kind of field today, where back in 1863, the day before the 4th of July of that year, to celebrate the nation's independence, we had an epic battle of a different proportion involving Wisconsin and Mississippi and people from the northern part of the country and the south. And it just is an interesting correlation to what that conflict compared to the games that we love on Saturdays on football fields entailed. But I finished the report and walked back down where my friends were. And Jack Drummond, our fantastic guide, we knew him from high school, again, totally consumed with Gettysburg and really knowledgeable of every inch. When I reached to that point down there, he said, take two steps to your left and one step back. And I was confused, but I did it anyway. And he said, you're probably wondering why I asked you to do that. And I said, yeah. And he said, this is the spot where the one group of Confederate troops that breached the Union lines after the overwhelming majority of Pickett's charge were mowed down in that assault, General Armistead and his troops actually climbed the barrier and got into the Yankee position for hand-to-hand combat. And you are standing directly on the spot where General Armistead fell and his assault and his life ended on that very spot you're standing. So I was doing my radio report literally just feet away from where the most dramatic part of that conflict took place. And this was American versus American. This was brother versus brother. But this was a war and a conflict where the definition of the country would come to fruition. And it was, I won't say an inevitable conflict, but just the things that weren't addressed when the country was founded, like the fact that slavery was not abolished as America was conceived, was a terrible mistake. The reason that it was not abolished was not a racist inclination or anything of those lines. It was strictly a situation where the southern states, who were critical to joining in with the union's locations, they would not have gone along with the deal. It was one of those terrible kind of concessions that you make in negotiation. And I think Thomas Jefferson said it best, because there were a lot of people frustrated with the fact that this country moved forward with the hideous institution of slavery still in place. It was not favored. It was dramatically opposed by a lot of the citizens at the time, many of the states, but the Confederate states, the Southern states at that time, really held on to it and insisted it could not be abolished because of simple economics. The invention of the cotton gin had revolutionized the whole industry of providing cotton to the rest of the world. And it was such a efficient situation that they needed more and more laborers to pick that cotton, to be introduced into that machine, to be produced into product. It was just an economic engine for the South, and it was what they were totally relying on. So that compromise was made, and Thomas Jefferson said, you know, I feel terrible about this, but it's like holding a wild animal who's rabid behind the ears. You don't like being in that position, but you're sure as hell afraid to let it go. So anyway, that was the inevitable conflict. The states' rights issue against the federal government, a lot of the things that we are balancing today come from this conflict, because there are still those who want to have this massive federal government, and the founders did not want that. They wanted the states to be pretty much in charge of their own laws and their own destinies, and so we continue to struggle with that today. But all that being said, there were so many heroic people fighting for what they believed in that time. And, you know, the Union Army believed that, and the Union philosophy was, we have to win this war to preserve our Union and keep this audacious experiment alive. And of course, when Lincoln went to the battlefield at Gettysburg and dedicated the ceremony, the cemetery at a formal ceremony, it almost didn't happen. Lincoln was the president, but he was invited as an afterthought. Lincoln was, a letter was sent just a couple of weeks before the observance in November of 1864, and inviting Lincoln to speak. And but the invitation says, we would welcome you, Mr. President, to come and make a few brief remarks on to mark the occasion. At that time, Lincoln, who was, of course, born in a log cabin in Kentucky and had gravitated to Illinois and become prominent in politics, a trained lawyer who basically educated himself by doing his own reading and research. You were able to get a law degree in those days without having to go to college and go through all the hoops and bells and whistles of this era. But Lincoln, at the last moment, decided to go by train to Pennsylvania for the Gettysburg ceremony. The featured speaker that day was Edward Everett. Edward Everett had been the former governor of Massachusetts. He had been a Harvard, which is funny now because Harvard was very revered at that time, but now kind of under scrutiny for a lot of their ideological anti-American, let's just call it what it is, American hating curriculum and activities. But Everett was probably the most celebrated speaker in the entire country. He had done time in Congress. He was just a guy that, if you're going to have an occasion to mark, this is the guy that everybody thought was the wonderful orator of his day. Everett stood up, and remember, this was probably not an ideal weather day in later November in Pennsylvania, but you had a huge crowd, of course, to dedicate the cemetery. Everett stood up and gave a 2-hour and 9-minute speech. The crowd was not seated. They were standing. You can imagine how uncomfortable. Imagine standing there and this guy is going on and on and on for 2 hours and 9 minutes in this speech. And he finished up and went back and sat down, and the president was introduced. And Abraham Lincoln, by reports at the time, and we don't have exactly the accurate times on it, but Lincoln spoke for less than 3 minutes. Most reports say about 2 minutes and 40 seconds compared to 2 hours and 9 minutes for his predecessor. And Lincoln delivered probably the greatest political speech, the greatest unifying speech, the greatest speech of clarity in American history, the Gettysburg Address. And when he sat down, there was just a smattering of applause. And like my partner Terry said, well, no wonder they were exhausted from Edward Everett's speech. There couldn't be anything but a smattering of applause. But Lincoln, who had handwritten the speech, sat back down next to Stanton, his Secretary of War, who had accompanied him to the ceremony. And he said, well, that speech didn't scour, which was a plowing term, which meant if you went out with a plowing equipment and were trying to dig the soil to plant your crop and it wasn't deep enough, then the plow failed to scour. So he said that speech didn't scour, otherwise thinking that he had just kind of laid an egg. But it didn't take long before, and the next day, journalism hasn't changed that much. We think we live in these unique times of divisiveness, but there were several major papers that said Lincoln's remarks were dishwashy, I think was the term used, and inappropriate. But it didn't take long for people to realize that what he said, it was actually one of the great speeches of all time to kind of set the occasion. And even Edward Everett himself sent a personal letter to the White House congratulating the president. He said, you did more in 2 minutes to capture the spirit of the event than I did in 2 hours of trying to relate that significance of the occasion. And that was a major endorsement. And now go back today on this Memorial Day. If you get a chance, there's some really good recorded versions, of course, not Lincoln himself, of the Gettysburg Address. And it really sets the tone of why this day is so important. He talks about the soldiers who'd given their lives to try and preserve their country and fight to make other men free. It's just very moving. It's just outstanding. And it sets the tone, because Lincoln shortly thereafter declared that the final Thursday of every November in marking that occasion was going to be designated not as Memorial Day at that time, but as Decoration Day. And it, in the American tradition, this was an observance at the end of each November to mark the occasion of soldiers that had given their lives at that time, of course, in the Revolutionary War, the War of 1812, and the Civil War, to preserve the Union, to keep the dream of this country alive. And it was an observance on a local level. There would be bands, there would be ceremonies, but the main cause of the original Memorial Day, as set aside by Abraham Lincoln, was to decorate the graves of fallen soldiers in cemeteries with American flags and flowers and what other tributes were appropriate. And that's how the concept of this holiday began. As time has gone on, I think it would surprise a lot of people to learn that Memorial Day, per se, the current tradition of Memorial Day, was not officially adopted by the federal government until 1971. So you're talking 1864 to 1971, when, again, it was more of a local observance to honor your fallen heroes in whatever town or city or countryside you lived on. But Memorial Day did not become an official holiday till 1971. And now I think the understanding of what exactly the day is has been a little clouded. So it's important for all Americans. And if you have children, it's important to have them understand that the reason they live in the greatest country of the world was the sacrifices of so many of these people. Ronald Reagan gave a fabulous Memorial Day speech a number of years ago. And in that speech, he talks about, you know, you talk to people now and they say, you know, we don't have heroes anymore. He says, well, they're wrong about that. They just don't know where to look. You look at Little Round Top. You look at places like, and he keeps saying places like Normandy Beach, the Battle of the Bulge, Guadalcanal, Pork Chop Hill. He goes through a whole bunch of famous battles where the Americans fought so valiantly, again, to preserve your rights, your liberties, your freedom, and government of the people, by the people, for the people. That's what Memorial Day is all about, remembering the people who gave the last full measure of devotion and laid down their lives for their country. Reagan talks about in that speech a World War I soldier in 1917. I think his name was Martin Ladowski, from somewhere in Massachusetts. He was a 23-year-old barber in training. He was cutting people's hair. He volunteered when the Americans got into World War I, which started off as a European conflict where basically Germany and some of their allies, which would be repeated, of course, just about 25 years later in World War II. But Germany and France were the primary combatants, and the French and the British were basically getting their butt kicked. The war was on the brink of falling apart, and America, Woodrow Wilson, the president, finally deployed American troops, and we did not have a lot of trained military at that time. A lot of these were young people like this Martin Ladowski, who was a barber by trade. He went there and learned the horrors of war, because that was what was called trench warfare, where both sides dug in at various sides of a battlefield and just fought for every inch of territory. And it was further made not only deadly with the fire that was exchanged as you hunkered down in these ditches to try to stay alive, but that's when the whole concept of bombing the defensive positions with these gas implements was so insidious, blinding and decapacitating soldiers. I mean, just the most horrid war conditions you could possibly imagine. But Ladowski, who was just a private, was given an important responsibility of running like between these entrenched positions to inform other commanders and coordinate. Of course, they couldn't radio or contact any other way. It had to be written messages. And Ladowski was tragically killed at 23 years old, trying to get from one entrenchment to another to send an important communication. When they recovered his body after he was killed, he had a diary in his pocket, and he wrote, and I'm paraphrasing, but words like this. He says, "We have to win this war. It is critical for the world to maintain its freedom and liberty. And I am so committed to this cause, I will do anything within my power to make sure that takes place." He goes to the point where, "I am assuming that I alone am the responsible for the outcome of this conflict, and will give everything I have humanly possible to make sure that the result is the one the world absolutely needs. So this 23-year-old kid was so committed to this, a war in a different part of the world that at that time didn't directly affect our country, but he was so committed. And that's the kind of American spirit that has exemplified our lives. World War II, of course, the Normandy invasion to give the Allied troops the chance to take France back and to advance on Germany, finally ending the war. If you saw the sacrifice so many Americans made on that day, Canadians and British troops as well, to really achieve the impossible. And I loved what Donald Trump said in his inaugural speech just a few months ago when he retook the office of the presidency. He said, the impossible, achieving the impossible. That's what Americans are best at. And wouldn't it be great if all of us start to adopt that idea that, yeah, you know, what we've done, what we've accomplished for the nation, the fact that we're on the verge of 250 years, that would have been considered impossible in the old world where all of this emanated from, when people came looking for an opportunity to build something extraordinary. And that's what this country is. But think about those words, achieving the impossible. That's what Americans are best at. I love that phrase. I love that idea. And gosh, I hope that I'm going to live to see this country have a complete rebirth of freedom and revival of spirit. We've got too many people right now that have been twisted and whatever you want to call it, have been kind of reprogrammed to hate this country and to criticize everything that's been accomplished. And that just spits in the face and completely sullies the memory of the people who died to keep our country free and to preserve our way of life. And I think on this day of all days, it's time for everybody to step back and understand that's what Memorial Day is. Decoration Day. It almost brought a tear to my eye to see a little bit of footage yesterday on a news program of a bunch of Boy Scouts, young kids, 12, 13, 14 years old, hundreds of them went to a military cemetery in Canton, Georgia, where there are over, I can't remember the exact number, but over 1,000 native Georgians who had died in various wars are buried there. And every one of those Boy Scouts worked tirelessly for hours to put flags and decorations and flowers on the gravestones of all and the resting sites of all of these extraordinary Americans. And that is really the tradition of the day, to remember, to thank, and most of all, appreciate the ultimate sacrifice for all of our freedom and all of our liberty. And that's the message I wanted to convey on this Memorial Day. God bless you. God bless America, and God bless the heroic souls of all of our fallen heroes. I'm Kip Kiefer. We'll be back to regular politics next week. There's a whole lot going on. The big, beautiful bill is making its way through Congress. We will tell you how that's doing, and I guarantee in the next 7 days there will be just a rash of headlines. There's never a limit of things to talk about here on the show. I'm Kip Kiefer on TKR. Thank you for tuning in. Happy Memorial Day, everybody. I hope you have a wonderful day of observance, and take a little bit of time to walk off by yourself and fondly remember all of those who have given so much so we can have so much. Have a great week, everybody.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.